The young man took out a handful of tiny pillboxes. "Now," he said peremptorily, "step forward, please. One at a time and no shoving." One at a time, with no shoving, the twins stepped forward. First two males, then a female, then another male, then three females, then the savage stood looking on. Oh, brave new world, oh, brave new world. In his mind, the singing words seemed to change their tone. They had mocked him through his misery and remorse, mocked him with how hideous a note of cynical derision. Fiendishly laughing, they had insisted on the low squalor, the nauseous ugliness of the nightmare. Now, suddenly, they trumpeted a call to arms. Oh, brave new world! Miranda was proclaiming the possibility of loveliness, the possibility of transforming even the nightmare into something fine and noble. Oh, brave new world! It was a challenge, a command. "No shoving there now!" shouted the deputy sub-bursar in a fury. He slammed down the lid of his cash box. "I shall stop the distribution unless I have good behavior." The deltas muttered, jostled one another a little, and then were still. The threat had been effective. Deprivation of soma. Appalling thought. "That's better," said the young man, and reopened his cash box. Linda had been a slave. Linda had died. Others should live in freedom, and the world be made beautiful. A reparation, a duty, and suddenly it was luminously clear to the savage what he must do. It was as though a shutter had been opened, a curtain drawn back. "Now," said the deputy sub-bursar. Another khaki female stepped forward. "Stop!" called the savage in a loud and ringing voice. "Stop!" pushed his way to the table. The deltas stared at him with astonishment. "Ford," said the deputy sub-bursar below his breath. "It's the savage." He felt scared. "Listen, I beg you," cried the savage earnestly. "Lend me your ears." He had never spoken in public before and found it very difficult to express what he wanted to say. "Don't take that horrible stuff. It's poison. It's poison." "I say, Mr. Savage," said the deputy sub-bursar, smiling propitiatingly, "would you mind letting me poison to the soul as well as body?" "Yes, but let me get on with my distribution, won't you? There's a good fellow." With the cautious tenderness of one who strokes a notoriously vicious animal, he patted the savage's arm. "Just let me..." "Never," cried the savage. "But look here, old man. Throw it all away. That's horrible poison." The words, "throw it all away," pierced through the enfolding layers of incomprehension to the quick of the Delta's consciousness. An angry murmur went up from the crowd. "I come to bring you freedom," said the savage, turning back towards the twins. "I come..." The deputy sub-bursar heard no more. He had slipped out of the vestibule and was looking up a number in the telephone book. "Not in his own rooms," Bernard summed up. "Not in mine, not in yours, not at the Aphroditeum, not at the centre or the college. Where can he have got to?" Helmholtz shrugged his shoulders. They had come back from their work, expecting to find the savage waiting for them at one or other of their usual meeting places, and there was no sign of the fellow. Which was annoying, as they had meant to nip across to Biarritz in Helmholtz's four-seater sporticopter. They'd be late for dinner if he didn't come soon. "We'll give him 5 more minutes," said Helmholtz. "If he doesn't turn up by then, we'll..." The ringing of the telephone bell interrupted him. He picked up the receiver. "Hello, speaking?" Then after a long interval of listening, "Ford in flivver," he swore. "I'll come at once." "What is it?" Bernard asked. "A fellow I know at the Park Lane Hospital," said Helmholtz. "The savage is there. Seems to have gone mad. Anyhow, it's urgent. Will you come with me?" Together, they hurried along the corridor to the lifts.